professional brewer needs to accept from the outset that you're never going to exactly hit the numbers every time. If you're taking measurements in your brewery on equipment that's not accurate or precise, then how is it possible for you to make great quality beer? And it's just not. G'day, brewers. Welcome to the Quality Focus Pro Brewers podcast. My name is Hendo. I am a pro brewer coach at the Rockstar Brewer Academy, and I help brewers who struggle to find reliable brewing technical knowledge to make the best beer that they can. And today we're going to have a chat about a really cool topic that's not really thought about a lot. When I speak to a lot of brewers, they want to make better beer, but get caught up in the whole tweaking recipes and all that sort of thing, where my point of view is don't tweak your recipes, tweak your process. And so today what we're going to talk about is A, setting quality targets, and B, you're never exactly going to hit the numbers every time, and what you do when you are a little bit out with regards to, you know, hitting things like gravity numbers and pH numbers and stuff like that. But first I've got to say, g'day Adzi, how you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. Looking forward to this one. I've got a couple of curly questions to throw you later on. I think it'll be... I think it's just good overall, because we all want good beer. And if you're going to brew, unless you're even if you're a brewery, I guess, that is brewing a different beer every single time, you're still going to want to know what you've done and what the targets were, so that you're hitting those beer numbers and everything, because... Yeah, if you want to do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. Consistency is key. I mean, that's a lot of the brewers that I speak to when they're considering joining the Rockstar Brewer Academy is they go, I just want to make consistent beer. And I think the first thing you need to do in order to get towards consistency is just setting a standard as to what consistent is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's good for the punter too, right? They don't want to be tasting a different beer that you call the same every single week, and every time they go in there, it's a different beer. So,
yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a reason why you, as a professional brewer, you want to brew consistent beer. And the fact of the matter is that most of the punters, most of the drinkers out there, they're not beer experts, right? And they're not sensory experts, but they do know when a beer is different, right? And for a lot of people with untrained palates, different equals yuck.
Yep.
Right. And so the moment ideally what you want is for your punter to go to the bottle shop or liquor store, reach into the fridge, grab your beer on a Friday afternoon, and do that every single Friday afternoon, because that's going to get you repeat sales and that's going to help you grow your brewing business. Or alternatively, if you're a taproom kind of situation, you just want people coming back because... And you need to give them an experience so that whenever they interact with your beer, with your liquid, that they know exactly what they're going to get. And that is what consistency is all about. And there's a skill to it, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It's more than just a skill. It's business critical, really. When you're setting targets, you can set targets up all day, but what challenges are there around them? Like when you're setting these targets, you can't just blindly throw out numbers. Like, it's not just as easy as that.
You know, first and foremost, you can't just go and set out and go, oh, I'm going to go and brew a beer, without actually defining three things with regards to that beer. You need to define the raw materials that are in the beer. A lot of brewers get too laser focused on that. The second thing you need is you need to have documented your consistent process as in how the beer is made. Not just brew day, people. It's not just about work production. It's about what happens in the cellar, what happens in packaging and getting the beer out the door. That also needs to be documented and needs to be consistent. And then thirdly, as we've spoken about a few times on this podcast, is you need to have a very clear definition of quality. And how we do it at the Rockstar Brewer Academy is we write down, before we even go and brew a beer, we write down quality or define quality through two lenses, which is called fit for use and true to brand. So fit for use is all of the numbers that you can measure with an instrument, okay? You know, gravity, pH, carbonation, color, haze, alcohol. If there's a machine that can create a number, that's a fit for use quality metric. But then the other one that's usually missing is true to brand, which is a written description of what's this beer supposed to look like? What's it supposed to smell like? What's it supposed to taste like? What's it supposed to feel like? It's not a tasting note, right? So you can put your Cicerone stuff aside, but you as a brewer need to have a clear written description of what the consumer experience is going to be. And a lot of brewers just simply don't do that. If you don't do that, then it's inevitable that you're going to wind up not creating the beer that you set out to make because you haven't, A, mapped the pathway, and B, defined what the destination is supposed to look like.
Yeah, 100%. I think some of your measurement tools that you have, like not every brewery will have all of those measurement tools, like to measure EBC or SRM or all those sorts of things. So if you don't put that in your true to brand, it will be like you're saying, oh, this is the sort of color that we're going for. But if you haven't got that in a way to measure that at all with your measurement tools, because some brewers just don't have all of those sort of tools. So it has to go through to brand to say, this is a dark beer or like a black beer.
I 100% get where you're going with that. And indeed, that's a really good point that you've raised, because if you're a small brewery or if you're building brewery and you're just starting out and you don't have a big budget for, you know, measurement equipment and that sort of thing, then there's going to be gaps in your definition of beer quality from the fit for use lens. And so the really good thing is that by having a definition of quality through both fit for use and true to brand, is that one can fill in the gaps for the other, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, as you said, if you don't have a way to measure color, then write, you know, in your fit for use description as an EBC number or an SRM number, then fill in the blanks with your true to brand description, right? Write down exactly what the color should be. Same goes for things like haze and that sort of thing.
Yep.
It's like have a very clear description of the amount of haze and stuff like that. It doesn't work for some things, like for example, you know, alcohol, where you need to hit a certain number. You can't really taste the amount of alcohol in a beer from a true to brand perspective. But there are still a lot of blanks that can be filled in just by using both fit for use and true to brand together.
Yeah, 100%. Like even two that you think might work together, but not always, is carbonation. We can measure carbonation and we know what we're going to hit and where we want to hit it. But how tight those little bubbles are and that sort of stuff in your true to brand is a different thing altogether.
Yes, absolutely. Things like, you know, foam and head retention, that sort of thing, which we've spoken about before. Mm. There are actually instruments that can measure foam and head retention, but but they're really high end sort of stuff. That you really only see sort of mega breweries, that sort of thing. But, you know, you can fill that in with a true to brand description. But I think the really interesting thing is, right, is that when you become a professional brewer, right, the thing that you need to understand is that the process of manufacturing beer, right? It's as fun as it is being a brewer, manufacturing as a vocation is never perfect, right? You know, you might be on brew day and you might have a number with regards to what you want the OG of a particular SKU of beer to be, but it's actually very rare that you actually go and exactly hit the number every time. And so what do you do, right? Do you just go, oh, I missed the OG by, you know, one gravity point. I'm just going to chuck out that batch. No, you can't. You don't do that, right? And so a professional brewer needs to accept, right, from the outset that you're never going to exactly hit the numbers every time.
Yeah. Okay.
And so the next thing that needs to logically come from that is, okay, so if I accept that I'm never going to exactly hit the numbers every time on any metric, any fit for use metric, how much can I be out before it starts to become a problem? And most brewers have never actually even considered that.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's a decision process that needs to happen where you basically give yourself a little bit of leeway, you know, on what's still acceptable, right? And I think that's what we should talk about today, I reckon.
Yeah, because I think too, it's some of those tolerances, depending on your instrument and what you're measuring, some can be quite big, but some also need to be quite tall and for different reasons. Your ABV.
Absolutely, yeah.
So ABV sometimes, if that's what's printed on your can, I don't know what it's like in other countries. You might know more, but in Australia, you've got to be 2.02 within that ABV.
0.2%, yep.
Yeah. To make sure that you're within that range, and that's okay. That's calibrated. That's fine through the thing. But if you're you're over that and your can and label's done, you're way out of tolerance and you need to fix.
I've been very fortunate that I've traveled all over the world and seen some of the regulatory requirements, particularly with alcohol like, for example, if you have a can of beer and you print on your can that this beer is 5% ABV, in different countries, in different, jurisdictions, there's actually a tolerance that you're allowed, that the actual liquid is allowed to differ from what is declared on the label. So here in Australia, the difference between what you declare on the label and what the actual liquid must be is only 0.2% ABV, right? And when you think about it that way, with a number like alcohol, it's really important because, you're giving someone an alcoholic product. They might choose to monitor their alcohol intake and might be choosing to drive home or something like that.
Yep.
And so if you've declared a 5% beer and you're actually delivering a 6.5% beer, that's a completely different ball game. And the consumer doesn't know what their actual alcohol intake is and whether they're actually able to legally drive home.
Yeah.
Right. And so this is where, or in different countries as well. So I remember I was in Bali around a year ago, and the difference there, I think it's around 2.5%.
Oh, wow.
So basically you can declare on the label that the beer is 5% ABV, but actually deliver a 3% beer.
Wow.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's why you drink Bintangs all day and don't get plastered.
That's a cost saving.
And so wherever you happen to be watching this in the world, your mileage might vary with regards to that. Now, alcohol is a pretty key one. But then, there are some of the less sort of like need to be, have the scrutiny around sort of the legal requirements around that, but are just numbers that are directly related to the flavor and the flavor consistency of the beer. Take beer pH as a classic example, okay? pH is important for beer, for beer flavor, and if they get outside of a certain range for stability and that sort of thing. But the thing is that as you make a different batch of beer from batch to batch, you might be like us here in Brisbane where the water makeup varies constantly. And so your beer pHs are going to vary. And then you've got to ask yourself, okay, so what's an acceptable tolerance from that target that I'm allowed to vary and still consider this product to be of a acceptable quality level?
Yeah. It comes down to your equipment too, right? When you're doing your fit for use, your equipment that you're using, so whether you're using high-end hydrometers or C-boxes, all of this stuff, can you rely too much on it?
I think the question is not necessarily relying too much on it, Adzi. I think the issue is that blindly relying on the information that an instrument in your brewery gives you. Okay.
Yep.
So let's take a classic example, pH meters, right? pH meters are a very, very delicate instrument. Mm. It's a very thin bulb of glass on the end of your pH meter probe, and breweries are really harsh environments for a delicate piece of equipment like that. And with pH being a beer flavor number, let's say, for instance, that you have not calibrated your pH meter on a regular basis, right? Then whenever you take a pH meter or pH reading in your brewery, right, the information that's being presented to you that you make quality decisions about, if that information is invalid in some way, then you're going to make quality decisions about your beer that's going to throw consistency issues into your final product, right? case in point, if you're measuring the final beer pH of something as it's coming out of the tank, you haven't calibrated your pH meter, and it's saying that the pH is you know, too low. You're aiming for 4.2, yeah, but you're getting like 3.9. That's a really big variance. And all of a sudden you're thinking, oh God, I need to fix the pH of this beer. I know there's, I need to throw this beer out. But in actual fact, the beer pH is probably okay in terms of its true value, what the actual pH of the beer is. But then you've got a pH meter, which is giving you invalid information, and you're all of a sudden you're panicking for literally no reason.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, on the flip side, let's say that the pH meter is telling you that something is on spec, but in actual fact, because it hasn't been calibrated, it's actually out of spec, right? And again, you would just pass that through and just go, oh yeah, yeah, pH is 4.2, that's fine, just send it. When in actual fact, the pH is way out of spec and the beer is actually going to taste different because it is out of spec.
Yeah.
And I call it brewing blind, basically. So it can be really frustrating, right? Because, right, if you put all of these things together, okay? So if you haven't set quality targets around every part of your brewing process, okay, and then not setting tolerances. So targets and tolerances go together. So tolerance is an acceptable range outside of your target where everything is still considered to be okay because nobody's perfect, right? And then on top of that, if you're taking measurements in your brewery on equipment that's not accurate or precise, and we'll talk about those things in a second, then how is it possible for you to make great quality beer? And it's just not.
And it's always going to make it impossible, right? But not only impossible, you can also waste time, resources, like a whole lot of stuff. It's frustrating for brewers.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the thing is that in a brewery, let's say you're even if you're a small brewery and you're starting out, or you're a bigger brewery and you've got like a team of brewers and that sort of thing, whatever size your brewery is, right? As a head brewer of a brewery, there's information coming from you from a lot of different parts of the brewery and that sort of thing as different batches of beer work their way through the brewery. I don't want to be informed when things are going right. I need to be informed when things are going wrong so that I can step in, make a change, bring that batch of beer back on track and move on. If I'm bombarded with information constantly that everything's okay, I'm going to miss the things when things are going wrong. And hence, that's another reason why, A, you need to set clear quality targets, and that, B, you have tolerances around each of those targets.
With the tolerances, do you get your tolerances? Like, is it best to set up your tolerances based on, like, legalities, like ABV? Or because some people might not know, they might be going in blind to working out these tolerances. And when they're first doing it, they might have never heard this concept before of having to set these tolerances. So where do you even start on setting your tolerances?
It's a great question. I think the best place to start is to actually make a list of the fit for use measurements that you take in your brewery that you have the capability of making. Okay. So for example, can your brewery measure gravity? Sure. Most breweries can. You should be. Can your brewery measure pH? Yep. Every brewery can measure pH, right? Can your brewery measure dissolved oxygen? Do you have a DO meter? And the answer might be no for a lot of breweries. Okay. Yes. And that's okay. Right. But at the very least, make a list of the things that you have the capability to measure.
Yeah. Right? Temp of
gravity fermenting is an easy one. pH, temperature is one. Volume is a common one. Weight, right? So let's say you're doing cans and you've got scales, you've got a can weight and that sort of thing. Make a list. Alcohol is an interesting one because not every brewery has the ability to be able to test the ABV of their beer. Right. But then you might be in a regulatory environment like ours where we've got a very tight tolerance on that. You might have to find a way in which you can calculate alcohol. So here in Australia with the ATO, you're allowed to submit a formula based on starting gravity and finishing gravity and measure alcohol that way. That's totally doable. Right. So making a list of the things that you can measure in your brewery, all the different metrics you're able to measure. And then the next thing you need to do is to basically go through and go, okay, which ones have a regulatory requirement that I need, that I must adhere to, right, in order to operate my brewery legally. Alcohol is probably the first one there, right? And what is the legal tolerance? And all of a sudden, bang, that one's done, okay? It's easy for every brewer in Australia because it's 0.2%. It's easy for every brewery in Indonesia because it's 2.5%, right? Bigger tolerance, but the outcome is the same. You know the legal requirement, you document the legal requirement, and it's done.
Right? Yeah.
And then there are other things that you know, once you've worked out the tolerances that are based around legal requirements, then you need to look at the tolerances that do things like affect aroma, flavor, and visual outcomes with the beer. Okay. So pH is usually a really good one, right? Because every brewery can measure pH.
Yep.
But if I have a beer, or if I'm taking a wort sample or something like that, what's an acceptable tolerance for pH? If I'm targeting if I've got a mash pH I'm measuring, for instance, and my target is 5.35, well, how much can I deviate from 5.35 either above or below?
Yep.
And still wind up with a decent batch of wort?
Right? Yeah.
And that's the thing that you need to think about. The best way for a brewer to do that is in those things that affect flavor, have a look at your true to brand description of your beer. And if the beer isn't meeting that true to brand description, have a look at the fit for use numbers that might be impacting that, and then set your tolerances based on that. Members of the Rockstar Brewer Academy do is we actually give them a list of standard tolerances. We have a whole list of standard tolerances for all the common things. In fact, all of the uncommon things, for even things like dissolved oxygen and stuff like that. And you just get it. And the best thing that you do with your standard brewery tolerances, it's a really easy one to implement for the Rockstar Brewer Academy members, because all they do is they just delete the ones that they don't have the capability to measure and stick it up on the wall, on their wall of wisdom. It's done. It's like a 5-minute job.
Excellent.
It's amazing.
Is that for each beer, or you have that, like, obviously you've got it for each beer, but your wall of wisdom doesn't include every single beer of that sheet? Is that just what you measure?
No. So this is kind of taking a step back, Adzi, right? So you create what's called standard tolerances, right? So we document what just the separation between a target and a tolerance.
Yep.
Okay. So different beers, different brands of beer that you might make, they're going to have different OGs and different final gravities and different pHs and all that sort of thing. Each individual beer has its own characteristics, right? But then the tolerance steps in and overlays on every single skew of beer you make, and it goes, okay, so when I measure the gravity of this beer, I know what it should be, but how far out from that can I be?
It's the reference point for that.
The standard brewery tolerances dashboard on the community members' walls of wisdom, it basically says for all pH measurements in the brewery, you can be plus or minus 0.1. Or for all gravity readings in the brewery, you can be plus or minus 1 SG point or 0.2 Plato or whatever it happens to be. The other thing, the really good thing about the standard brewery tolerances dashboard, is it clearly sets out, right, what your units of measure are going to be in your brewery, right? Maybe you're a metrics brewery, right? Using SG and liters and hectoliters and, you know, EBCs and grams per liter of CO2, and that's okay. Maybe you're one of our American friends who are using freedom units, where you're using Plato and gallons and ounces and grams and all that sort of stuff. And that is also okay, right? But everybody in the brewery, in your brewery, needs to be speaking the same language, not only in terms of what are our units of measure. Imagine if you had one brewer who was talking in hectoliters, and then, you know, old mate on the other side of the brewery is talking in barrels. Never going to work, right? Never going to work. But if everyone's talking the same language with regards to units of measure, and then also on top of that, talking the same language with what is an acceptable tolerance, right? All of a sudden, you've created the lane markings on the freeway. Imagine yourself driving down the freeway, and you're in your lane, and the freeway turns slightly, so you turn the steering wheel slightly, but whatever happens, you're staying in your lane, right? That's kind of an analogy of what a tolerance is. If you start to veer outside the lane, then you can make a correction into the steering wheel, bring it back into the lane. Everything is okay. And that's kind of how, you know, how I sort of view beer production, you know, through the things that aren't always perfect, but you just make corrections and tap things in the right direction as it works its way through the brewery. And you're only being informed when things are not within the tolerances. So when you talk about targets and tolerances in the brewery, right? And you've heard me talk about this lots of times, talking about something that's on spec, right?
Yep.
So what does on spec mean, Adzie?
It fits within your tolerances. And if it doesn't, it's out of spec.
It fits within the tolerances of the target that you've defined, right?
Yep.
And a really good example of that is, let's talk about the OG of a particular beer, right? So let's say you're a metric metrics brewery and a target OG for a particular beer that you're brewing is 1045. The 1045 is your target. And then you go and have a look at your standard tolerances in your brewery. And a standard tolerance for a brewery is one SG point, 0.001, okay? So if my target was 1045 and I brew some wort that's 1047, is it on spec?
No.
No. Right. And all of a sudden you go, okay, great. Now I can fix it. Right. It's not on spec. There's no guesswork. Right. Something is either on spec or not. If I brew a beer, if I'm aiming for 1045 and I get 1045 and a half, it's on spec.
Yeah. Right.
It's not exactly 1045, but it's within the tolerance that is acceptable. That's not going to affect the beer in a negative way. That is on spec. It's good enough. Right. And that's and so when you hear me talk about beers being on spec or not on spec, it makes not only troubleshooting, but trouble identifying process so much easier. And so, yeah, like I said, one SG point or 0.2 Plato either side of any target in a brewery is a pretty typical standard tolerance. You know, pH plus or minus 0.1 is a pretty standard tolerance. So if I'm measuring my mash pH and I'm aiming for 5.35, and I get 5.44, it's on spec.
Yep.
Right. But if I hit 5.46, then it's not on spec and I need to make some sort of correction. The really cool thing about setting tolerances in addition to targets is it stops you as the brewer from overcorrecting. Yep. pH is a pretty classic one, right? So let's say you're aiming for, again, I'll use the 5.35 as a pretty good example. You're aiming for a mash pH or a wort pH of 5.35. Right. And you get 5.47, it's out of spec. Then I'll take some corrective action. But if something is within tolerance, it's on the outer end, right? What it stops you from doing is going, oh shit, I need to put some acid in. Oh, put too much acid in. I need to double correct that with some bicarbonate. And all of a sudden you're going from one side to the other. Sometimes that's why you set tolerances, because you're just basically saying, this is good enough.
Right? Yeah.
If you're not happy with the number, that's okay. Make a note, and on the next time you brew it, try and do something to tighten things up, but you're still within spec.
Yeah.
Right. And that's okay. That's good enough.
You're a self-confessed nerd on all things sciencey, numbers and measurements and stuff like that. There's a lot of talk around accuracy and precision.
Yes.
What's the difference there? Because they sound similar.
They do.
And you and I have had this conversation before, and it hasn't all sunk in. Yeah.
Okay. People misuse the words accuracy and precision a lot. Okay. Now, here's the really interesting thing. Okay. So stepping outside of the brewing realm for a second, there is a science of measurement and it's called metrology. Okay. That is the science of measurement. Okay. Now, when we think about measuring something, okay, there are measurements that can be exact and there are measurements that can be an estimate, okay? Now, to give you an example of a measurement which is exact is how many cans of beer in that case? 24. That's exact, right? There is, if the case of beer is full, there are always going to be 24 cans in there, right? That's an exact measurement. But then there are estimates, and most of the measurements that we make in brewing are estimates. You know, weight is an estimate. You've got a scale, which is kind of estimating what the weight of something is. It's an estimate. When you measure gravity, it's an estimate. When you measure pH, it's an estimate based on what an instrument is telling you, right? A pH meter isn't counting the hydronium ions in your sample. A pH meter is more or less measuring the conductivity of the sample, and it's able to extrapolate what the pH of that sample is. That's an estimate. When you wind up, you know, thinking about when you take measurements of stuff in the brewery, right, there are errors can occur all the time, okay? And there are two types of errors that you'll experience in the brewery, right? You get what's called random errors, and you can get systematic errors, okay? So random errors are caused by things like not taking a pure sample, right? Let's say you've got, like a sample cup vessel that you're taking samples out of a tank, and if it's got a little bit of rinse water in there from the last time you used it, that sample's going to be diluted and it's going to be an erroneous, right? And then you've got systematic errors, which is things like I was saying before about not calibrating your pH meter, right? If your pH meter is uncalibrated or it's faulty and it's giving you wrong information, right? No matter how correctly you use it, no matter how well you follow the SOP, it's still going to give you erroneous information, right? And that's the really scary thing, right? So let's talk about accuracy versus precision, okay? Now, accuracy is how reliably an instrument is able to measure true value, okay? So true value, if we've got a sample and we're measuring, you know, gravity, for instance, with a density meter, okay? An instrument that is accurate will, you know, let's say you do the reading 20 times, for instance. Of those 20 times, it's going to be very close to the true reading of what the gravity actually is, okay? That means that it's accurate, all right? Precision is how close each of those 20 readings are to each other.
Yep.
Okay? Precision, you know, and precision also takes into account things like how many decimal points there are, you know, like when you've got scales, if you've got scales that only measure in whole pounds or whole kilograms, right, and you're trying to measure half a kilo of hops, for instance,
yeah,
that's going to be really problematic because there's a lack of precision, right? And so none of these things are based on a single measurement, okay? And so you have to take multiple measurements of a sample in order to work out if you're accurate and precise in your readings, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing, right? Is that accuracy and precision are not mutually exclusive, okay? This is where it gets weird, okay? So you can take a measurement in a brewery, right, that is accurate but not precise. You can also take a measurement in a brewery which is not accurate, but it is precise, right? You can take a measurement which is not accurate and not precise. And finally, you can have your measurement which is accurate and precise,
right? Yeah.
What do you think those things look like?
If you plot those sort of things on a graph, right, that they're the sort of things, all these records that you take, and those differences can be a lot, right? I would imagine there's some crossover within those different sort of ratios as you went through them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So to give you some examples, okay, something that is accurate and precise, which basically means, you know, take your density meter, it measures, you know, if you're doing SG, for instance, it's going to go down to four or five decimal places, I forget. And if you think about the true value of a wort sample, right, that means that density meter is getting within it, the number always varies every time you take a measurement, even of the same sample, but you know that it's close to true value because you've calibrated it, and those different numbers from the different measurements are close enough together that it's considered to be precise. That's accurate and precise, right?
Yeah.
Now imagine that same density meter, right, that wasn't calibrated against something like distilled water,
mm-hmm.
right? It would give you values which are not close to the true value of the actual sample itself, right? But the numbers that it does give you are close to each other. And that is not accurate, but precise.
Yep.
Okay. And then you've got accurate and not precise, which basically means imagine the same density meter, the same sample. Let's say the true value is 1045. And one sample, it gives you the actual 1045. And the next one, it gives you 1055. And the next one, it gives you 1025. And then 1033 and then 1047. But now if you take the average of those, now they're wildly different and far outside of the tolerance of what you would want in a brewery as far as a wort sample goes, right? But if you took the average of all of those readings, it would be accurate. So that's considered to be accurate but not precise, right? And then the fourth way to consider it, like not accurate, not precise, is this is just giving you random shit all over the place, right? If the readings aren't close to each other, that's not precise. And if it's not even related to the true value of the sample, not accurate either, right?
Yeah.
Different types of readings that you take for different stuff in the brewery, whether it's temperature or pH or carbonation or something like that, need to have a certain standard of accuracy and precision, right? As I said before, scales, right? The set of scales that you use for weighing out malt in your mill room is not the same set of scales that you're going to use measuring hops.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. Because both need accuracy, but both don't need that level of precision.
Yep.
Right. Your hop scale needs more precision than your malt scale needs. Right. Because if I'm making 50 hectoliters of beer and I put an extra 5 kilos or, 10 pounds of grist into the mash tun, it's not going to affect the beer.
Yeah.
Right. But if I replace that malt with hops, then all of a sudden I'm going to wind up with a pretty serious difference in the product and that sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
So that's the idea around accuracy and precision. And every brewer, every professional brewer, you need to be a master of metrology, right?
Yeah.
Because there's no point whatsoever in setting quality targets with your beer unless you have a good, deep understanding of measurements and what to do when things aren't on spec that are outside of your tolerance of quality targets and that sort of
thing. That's where your SOPs in calibration of all of these things as well come into play.
Absolutely. Oh, my God. Usually when I'm working with a brewer on the rare occasions that I do, on-site one-on-one coaching and that sort of thing, one of the first questions I'll ask is, how often are you calibrating your pH meter?
Yep.
The most common answers that I get is A, I calibrate it when it tells me to.
Yep.
And B, I calibrate it once a week.
Oof.
Right? And neither of those things are good enough.
No, that's a far out ways to do it.
Exactly. There are pH meters out there that will tell you when they need calibration. But don't wait for it to tell you.
No, just do it anyway.
Exactly. As I said before, pH meters are very delicate and breweries are very rough environments. Mm. And so if you've got a pH meter in your brewery, you need to calibrate it at least once a day.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you're getting a number out of your pH meter that doesn't look right for some reason, then you might need to calibrate it more than once a day.
Yeah,
and that's the thing that's going to give you certainty as to whether you're on track and that sort of thing. So, hey, I tell you what, I might do, Adzi.
Yeah,
I've got a sheet that can go on the wall near your lab bench in your brewery, and it's a pH meter calibration log. How about I give that away? Free.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. People would use that for sure. Good. I think people probably don't even realize that they should have something like that.
Exactly, right? So a pH calibration log is really good. It basically goes on a clipboard and gets stuck to the wall right near where your pH meter lives in your brewery. And all it is that every time you calibrate the pH meter, that you take a log that A, it was done, and you take certain readings from the pH meter, okay?
Yeah.
And as the head brewer, you walk through the brewery and you can actually see at a glance whether your pH meter is being properly taken care of. So the things you want to measure is, you're going to note the date and time that you calibrated the pH meter. And one of the other things that you're going to need to take into account is what's called the slope. So you use standard buffer solutions to calibrate a pH meter, usually 7 and 4 in a brewery, because we work in an acidic environment. I tend not to recommend that to doing 3-point calibrations of pH meters in breweries. Never put your pH meter in caustic if you're checking rinsing of caustic, because when you get a pH meter and you go from alkaline to acid and back to alkaline, it messes with them. Have 2 pH meters, one for alkaline if you want to go and check your caustic, and have another one for the acid scale for wort and beer and mash and all that sort of stuff, which is acidic. And you're going, and both of those pH meters will get long shelf life. So you have, so how you calibrate a pH meter, 2-point calibration, pH 7, pH 4, they're known solutions. And when you calibrate a pH meter, you basically say, okay, hey, pH meter, here is a known 7 pH sample. And it will measure the conductivity and go, yep, got it. All right. And then the next thing you do is you go and put it into the pH 4 solution, which is acidic, and it's a known pH 4. And then you tell the pH meter, hey, this is pH 4 now, mate. And it goes, yep, okay, got it. And then what it does is it calibrates a slope. So if you can imagine a conductivity reading and an imaginary point where pH 7 is and an imaginary point where pH 4 is, and you create a slope, so you create this imaginary line between the two, so that the pH meter is able to reliably know when it gets something that's sort of halfway between pH 7 and pH 4, that it knows exactly what the pH is.
Yeah.
That's why calibration is so important, right? So noting the slope, right? All good pH meters will measure the slope. And if your slope's getting in the low 90%, then it's time to have a look at your probe or something like that. So yeah, let's get away for free, Adzi. So I'll put a link the description or the show notes, that sort of thing. And you can grab yourself a copy of the pH meter calibration log. Go and install it in your brewery today. We go into a lot more detail about calibration of instruments and one of the best practices around that in the Rockstar Brewer Academy, but at the very least, taking note of when your pH meter is calibrated is going to get you started. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, nice. That's excellent. Mate, what have you ever stuffed up that's made you realize, wow, hang on a minute, this is a thing that I need to add into my tolerances or my fit for use? Like what's something that you've had that, like, because you were a learner too, you didn't just grow up and know all this stuff.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. I think probably the one that had an impact were always going to be the ones where you don't have your eye on the ball until it becomes a problem in some way. Okay. One of the things I think earlier in my brewing career where it became problematic was having a challenge around controlling beer pH and also the attenuation, the final gravity of the beer.
Yep.
And I found that what was happening was, at this time earlier in my career, I wasn't checking the pH of the wort before knockout.
Yep.
Right. And I was only checking cold side out of the fermenter after knockout, right? And so what was happening is I'd take a pH reading out of the tank, but at that point it was too late to take any corrective action.
Mm.
And so what was happening was, because the pH of the wort was different, it affected the fermentability of the wort, it affected the final pH of the beer, and therefore made the beer taste different. And I didn't know what was causing these inconsistencies in final gravity and flavor of the beer.
Yeah. Right?
And it turns out that what was missing in my quiver of stuff to measure was 2 things. Firstly, I wasn't accurately measuring volume in the mash tun on brew day.
Yeah.
So my liquor to grist ratios were all over the place.
Okay. Yeah.
Which then affects mash pH, which then affects wort pH.
Yeah.
And ultimately beer pH. And that will also, and because the concentration of enzymes, it's also going to affect attenuation as well. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was one point. And the second part was learning a technique on brew day to know, I mean, we've spoken about the sacred trilogy of wort beer measurements, which is wort gravity, wort pH, and wort temperature.
Yep.
You should you should be on spec for your for two of your Sacred Trilogy on Brew Day, which is Gravity and pH, hot side before you knock out. So you know you've got two out of three done. And so the only thing that you've got to concentrate on during knockout is temperature. Only one thing. And the thing is, you can dilute wort in the kettle easily and hit your target gravity, right? You can add acid or bicarbonate to your wort to manipulate the pH to get it to where you need it to be and do it hot side, so you're not going to risk any contamination or anything like that. And do it hot side, right? Yeah. And I think that was the big thing. So taking whirlpool measurements for gravity and, more importantly, pH for this particular scenario made sure that when my wort got into the tank and I pitched the yeast, that the Sacred Trilogy was there and it was, and I'd hit the numbers, right?
Yep.
And I was on spec for the three Sacred Trilogy numbers. And it takes 2 minutes, Adzi, go and make those checks. You know, I usually do it 10 minutes before the end of the boil because it's like I've got 10 minutes to go. If I need to make a correction, I'm not in a hurry, I'm not rushing or anything like that. And that's my usual jam there. And there's not a brew day that I participate in where I don't hit the numbers.
Yeah.
Right? It's really rare now. Like I'm literally getting to the 5.9s, 5 sigma, whatever they call it. It's five, you know, it's just, well, 6 sigma, sorry. It's just part of becoming, you know, better as a brewer is measuring and controlling the things that need to be measured and controlled.
Yeah. Right? Is that the sort of stuff, like how, what do you teach in the Rockstar Brewer around tolerances and like what sort of techniques or steps or what have you got in your gamut of information that you can give people? That...
Yeah. Well, okay. So a couple of things. So firstly, we've got a standard operating procedure library that you can just swipe SOPs from. So you don't have to like write the SOPs from scratch. Having SOPs around, like, and again, I'll keep talking about pH meters because that's kind of the theme for today, is having an SOP on how to calibrate and how to sample and how to use that pH meter.
Yeah.
Right. Is super important. And everybody needs to be doing it the same way. That's why standard operating procedure is so important. So swiping the pH meter SOP from the swipe library in the Rockstar Brewer Academy, super, super important, right? The next thing is to use the pH meter calibration log. So we've got calibration logs for pH meters, for density meters, DO meters, all that sort of stuff. It all exists, right? And then the third thing is using the product specifications, which you create during beer quality boot camp, which is your first 60 days. And that means setting targets around each, you know, initially we only do one beer in your lineup, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to make, and my promise is that you'll make the best ever batch of that beer in 60 days, right?
Yeah.
And so setting those targets around what those things. So, and then the fourth thing is we have a standard tolerances sheet, which goes onto your wall of wisdom, which goes on the wall in your brewery. So everybody knows what the tolerance is for pH, for instance, right? And they know that if something is not on spec, that they know to communicate that to raise that with the head brewer straight away, so the head brewer can step in and take corrective action, make those decisions, right?
Yeah.
Those things is kind of that's a big leap forward towards consistency. If you have standard operating procedures, if you have quality targets set, if you are calibrating your equipment on a regular basis, you're going to make great beer.
Yeah.
Right? Your recipe doesn't matter, right? You know, like the thing is you can have the best recipe in the world, but if you're executing that, if you're making that beer differently every time you make that beer, it is going to be inconsistent no matter how good the recipe is, right? So the difference is what we do, and I see lots of beer recipes, right? They're all great.
Yep.
They're all great, right? You as a brewer have great beer recipes and they look super creative and awesome and clean and crisp or hoppy or whatever. They look great, right? But then you got to ask yourself, okay, if I gave that recipe, if you gave your recipe to me to brew, right? Without changing the recipe at all, right? If you gave your recipe to me, right, and I was going to brew a batch of your recipe and you were going to brew a batch of your recipe, who would make it better? Right? Ask yourself that.
Yeah.
You know? And then you've got to ask yourself why. Why would one brewer make the same recipe better than another?
Yeah. Right?
And from my perspective, it comes down to the execution around process. That's super key.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. Mate, for anyone who is listening, if they're struggling with all this sort of stuff, what are the first steps that they can take to start doing this? Is just recording everything blindly and not knowing why they're doing it, or reaching out to you and say, here's what I need help with? Where are we?
It's a good question. Okay, so first thing you got to do is you got to set your quality standards, right? Product specification is the key to that. If you don't know how to do that, reach out to me and I'd be happy to have a chat about that. There'll be a link in the show notes there that you can reach out and have a calibration call with me, 15 minutes. We can have a chat about where you're at. Cool, right? Start to work on one beer at a time, right? Just do one beer at a time. Work on dialing in and documenting just one of your beers, okay? Because by doing one beer, you'll learn a quality system, okay, that you can then go and apply across all of the beers that you make in your brewery, right? It's like the training wheels, okay? You start riding the bike, you got the training wheels, okay, we've done one beer, okay, cool. And what you'll find is that once you've documented a product specification for one beer, most of the time, right, all of your beers are made pretty much the same way,
right? Yep.
The only thing that changes is the ingredients. You know, if you're making a pale ale, you're making an IPA, chances are it's going to be the same yeast strain. It's going to run on the same temperatures. You're going to do the diacetyl rest at the same time. You're going to dry hop it at the same time, right? That's great. That's efficiency. Awesome, right? But have you documented how those beers are made? And your lagers might be made a little bit different, right? The process is going to change ever so slightly. It's going to be different fermentation temperature. Cool.
Yeah.
Right? But the wort production process is the same. The fermentation process is largely the same.
Yeah. Right?
It might be a different yeast strain, but you're still going to do a diacetyl rest at the end and you're still going to do the same daily quality checks and all that sort of stuff. You can have a very diverse lineup of beers, but 90% of how that beer is made is going to be the same for all of them.
Yeah.
Right. And the only time that really differs is, you know, and significantly differs is, you know, when you start to step into things like, you know, kettle sours and stuff like that, that have a pretty significant change in the process. But even then, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, it's the ingredients change, the process is a little bit changed. You may be going to 80% instead of 90% the same.
Yeah.
That's what makes consistent beer, is just documenting your process. Have a plan, have a system. And if you don't have a plan and if you don't have a system, reach out to me. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Love to help you. Come and join us at the Facebook group. If you head to qualityfocusedprobrewers.com, come and join the conversation at the Facebook group. It's pretty cool. Actually, there's a lot of questions this week of lots of brewers helping each other. I've been really encouraged by that. I've sort of stepped out and just let it go. If it gets a little bit toxic, then I'll step in, but it's been really good. If you listen to this, drop us a comment. I'm pretty responsive with comments and that sort of thing. That's super helpful as well. Hey, thanks very much, Adzi.
Thank you. Mate, yours too. Catch up for a beer on Saturday.
Catch you in the next episode, guys. Yeah, looking forward to it, mate. Should be a good one. Yeah. Cheers.